Welcome to Variant Frequencies. Month to month, our podcast brings you fiction stories from a different channel. Sci-fi, fantasy, horror, and some odd bands in between. Visit us at www.variantfrequencies.com.
Hello, I'm Rick Stringer. This month's story is from a guest author, A.R. Yngve. A.R. Yngve is a Swedish writer and illustrator in Sweden. His ongoing science fiction book series, Terra Hexa, is published by Wella. His short story, Sea, was originally published in the e-zine Simulacrum, 2004, and later in the Chinese magazine Science Fiction Story. Several of his short stories and older novels in English can be read for free at his website at http://yngve.bravehost.com. Now, on to our story. One unusually warm winter morning, she wakes up and finds that something she took for granted about the entire universe has radically changed. It is either the end of reality or the beginning of a new one.
Sea by A.R. Yngve. She wakes up and immediately senses something is wrong with her eyes. Maybe she's still dreaming. The bed is under her, the sheets over her body, the bedroom around her. But everything is too close. It's hot, much too hot for February. Breathing comes normally, despite the creeping sensation of claustrophobia. A bug, the type that's smaller than a fly, flies across the room toward the window. Temperature and humidity feels like August. A slight warm draft seeps in through the windowsill vent. The insect lands on the sheet before her. She rubs her sleepy eye and squints, then looks at the insect again. It starts to walk toward her, and it doesn't change size. It is somehow too large. The bedsheet is like a photograph on paper taken from above, and the corners of the bed are placed wrong, as if the bed grew wider near her feet. She shakes her head. The insect stops, alarmed by her movement, and flies off to the window. The window frame looks completely flat. It lies slightly to her left, no more than 5 feet away, and yet the farthest end of the frame is the same height as the near end. She mutters to herself that she's having a dream. This must be the kind where she's inside a photograph. That's right, how amusing. Ha ha, she's in a photograph where distance and angles are all off. That insect is standing on the windowpane now, and damn it, it is still the same bloody size as when it sat on her sheets. It looks close enough to touch. In fact, everything in the room looks close enough to touch. Giggling, she sits up in bed and reaches out for the insect on the pane. Suddenly her arm is up against her face and blocks half her field of view. What's wrong with her coordination? She makes an effort to point her arm away from her, but it just keeps blocking her view, as if it got coiled up against her face. No matter how much she mentally flails about that mischievous arm, she simply can't reach across the room to the window. She forces her arm down to her side, and suddenly her field of vision is free again, too free. The insect crawls around the windowpane in circles, round and round. That's odd, too. She knows that kind of insect. It comes from the potted plant on the other side of the bedroom. The potted plant also seemed to be standing too close. That bug usually bumps into the glass and keeps bumping a while, then gives up when it's sufficiently dizzy and continues flying through the room. Only this morning, the bug just walks in circles. Each circle looks like a perfect circle, never an oval, only perfect circles. She realizes that if her eyes and the bug's eyes are screwed up at the same time, it might mean something that can't be put into words. She wants to go back to sleep, close her eyes until the weirdness goes away. Her heartbeat is too rapid now to allow her to relax, so she crawls out of bed, stands up, and the wall seems to hit her in the face. There's no sound of a bump. A reflex causes her hands to fly up and cover her face, and she's blinded. An insight hits her. Slowly she wills her hands to move away from her face until she can feel the muscles in her arms strain. The slow movement causes an optic illusion. The hands refuse to change size even as she moves them out, but around them the view appears to zoom out and grow, like the zoom effect in the old Hitchcock movie Vertigo. She feels nauseous and staggers to the bathroom door next to the potted plant. Again, the walls seem to be in her face as she moves her feet. Looking down, she gets the impression that her legs and feet angle up against her nose with every step. She mumbles incoherent curses and grabs the door handle with her eyes shut. She can feel the door open as it should, feel her feet on the bathroom tile, and fumbles for the light switch. Click. Safe at last. Once she has shut the door and turned off the light, she uses the bathroom in the dark. Everything is in its right place. Everything works as it should. Her heart starts to slow down. It was all a hallucination. Dimly she recalls a warning on yesterday's evening news. Some astronomer warning that the expansion of the universe was slowing down very quickly. What was it that guy said? That the stars might look different and brighter once they didn't rush away from us? She curses all astronomers from the safety and darkness of her bathroom. Bloody eggheads screwing with our sense of reality, putting all sorts of weird ideas in our heads. It occurs to her that people were happier in the Middle Ages when they believed the sun revolved around the earth, a stable, ordered world that never changed. Once she is done dressing up, washing up, and brushing her teeth, skipping makeup and lipstick, she takes a deep breath and grabs the door handle. Enough with the weird eyesight. She will step out the door and everything is going to look normal. She closes her eyes, opens the door, and steps out of the bathroom. With her eyes shut, she kneels down on the bed and finds the clock radio buttons where they always are. She fiddles with the controls and finds the station that plays her favorite music. But there is no music. On every station there's voices, screaming voices, laughing, babbling in mad excitement, praying to God that it will end. She refuses to look. She stabs the channel switching button until she finds a voice that sounds in control of itself. It is a man's voice, stuttering yet rational. No reason to panic. There is nothing wrong with your eyes. What has changed is the rules of perception. It boils down to this. During the last few hours, things ceased to look smaller with distance. This is causing worldwide panic and confusion, of course, and caused chaos in road, railroad, and air traffic. I advise everyone not to use any sort of motorized vehicle until the situation has stabilized. A friend of mine who's a scientist is on my phone now. I'll ask him to try and explain what's happening. Are you there, Henry?
I hear you. Telephones seem to be working. Isn't that funny? Okay, I have a theory about this. Just recently, the Hubble Space Telescope registered a sharp increase in infrared radiation from deep space. The universe was heating up real fast, and all stars were suddenly getting brighter. Not enough that human eyes would register, not at first. And during the night, observatories across the world reported that the moon seemed to be falling in toward the Earth. On the other side of the planet, people panicked and thought the sun was exploding.
Is it true then? Is the sun exploding? Oh my God, are we going to die?
No, calm down. I know it looks like the sun just exploded, but if it did, we'd all be dead now. What's happened is, Christ, it's so hard to explain, but it makes sense in a crazy way.
She opened one eye, looked down at the bedsheet, closed beneath her face. It seemed strangely flat and occupied her entire view. Slowly she glanced up at the wall. The wallpaper was right up there against her nose, even though it ought to be 3 feet away. She shut her eye and listened, waiting for the explanation that would come, must come, before she started to scream.
It's funny, you know. There's been so very little disagreement among scientists about how to interpret Einstein's theory of space-time distortion. Most of us used to take it for granted that when the universe expanded, only the space between the stars increased, not the stars themselves. Well, seems we were being fooled by a trick of the light, so to speak. When the universe expands, every single thing in it does too. The sun, the planets, us, everything, swelling. Only we didn't see it before, because the speed of light isn't infinite. And that caused the illusion of perspective. We thought the sun looked small because it was far away. And it is far away, don't get me wrong. It still is, or we'd be burned to a crisp, Niall.
The size of the sun has changed?
Yeah, it has to. The light of the sun takes 8 minutes to reach Earth. We always see it as it looked 8 minutes ago. When the universe was expanding, it looked small because it was that small 8 minutes ago. It and the universe was expanding that fast. When the expansion stopped, things stopped changing size all the time. Which means we're now seeing things at a fixed size. We're finally beholding the world as it really is. There is no perspective. There never was one.
She rushes up from bed, shielding her eyes with one hand, and runs out on the porch. At least she's not screaming. Outside, all traffic had stopped. No traffic, no airplanes, trains, no birds. The sound of melting snow and ripping water filled the air. Other people were outside, across the street, beyond the houses, and all people were the same size, like in an ancient Chinese print. The suburb with its houses seemed to be abruptly cut off at the line of the horizon, as if the world ceased to exist there. But that wasn't true. A pedestrian appeared at the horizon, equal in size to the people standing on their flat lawns and driveways. His appearance was too sudden, as if the horizon was the edge of a sheet of paper and he had just been hauling himself up from the underside. A sparrow flew past her, very close. In the brief moment it passed her, the bird seemed large enough to fill the universe. She laughed, feeling drunk. The birds didn't sing. She looked up into the sky. It was clouded, but unusually bright. The clouds looked like clouds, only they floated too fast and too close. Then the breeze picked up, and the clouds began to part like a speeded-up movie. Exactly half the entire sky caught fire. The brightness was blinding, and she had to look away. A glowing, boiling flame reached out from space, just behind the parting gray clouds, and seemed to rush toward her, straight toward her. Everyone screamed and looked away from the burning half of the sky, a bright yellow wall of pulsating fire that slowly rolled along the cut-out horizon. She shut her eyes and felt the familiar warmth upon her skin. The sun was up. As long as you don't look, she thought, everything is okay. The moon wasn't visible yet, but it would be soon enough, and she would see every crater, every rock pass behind the clouds. Maybe she'd see the flag that the Americans had planted there in 1969. Suddenly she wondered, when the sun sets, what are the stars going to be like? Looking away from the wall of fire that was the sun toward the less bright half of the sky, she couldn't see planets or stars. The sky and clouds blocked the view. But sunset would come, more abruptly than usual, and she would see all the planets in their gigantic glory, covering the sky in bullet-like glimpses as they shot past in their orbits. And beyond them, other star systems and other planets, dimmer with distance, probably. And maybe, if she squinted real hard, she would see the surfaces of the passing distant worlds rushing past so incredibly fast, and she would wave in the hope that someone on another planet, light years away, would wave back. Light years away, years ago, but close enough to greet the new next door neighbors.
Thank you for listening to C, written and narrated by A.R. Yngve. To find out more about variant frequencies, please go to our website at www.variantfrequencies.com. And be sure to follow the links to our journal for notes about the production of variant frequencies. Thank you. From the Variant Frequencies team, Matt Wallace, Anne Stringer, and Rick Stringer.
We're back with another exciting installment of Interview with a Zombie. My guest today is the zombie formerly known as Bob. Bob, before the break, you were telling us about your love for the sci-fi podcast network, TSFPN.com. Why, yes, Bob, it certainly does have something for everyone. Well, of course you're a busy zombie. I mean, who isn't these days? That's why you're glad TSFPN has collected the best in podcasting all in one convenient place. Not until after you finished your interview. Well, there you have it, folks. Straight from the zombie's mouth, TSFPN.com, the place for out-of-this-world entertainment.
In a future where noir, cyberpunk, and visceral horror make mind-bending bedfellows, the only thing that separates a forsaken urban sprawl from a half-finished technological utopia is 16 miles of river. They're known as the Failed Cities. Two worlds populated by shadow agents, street soldiers, reluctant detectives, and femme fatales. When a single conspiracy touches them all, the story can only be told in their voices. Ethan, the street preacher. Truck, the hot-rodding neo-hipster, Knifesmith. The Feral Twins, whose passion for death and each other is the only escape from their own tormented psyches. Just a few of the characters that drive one of the most unique storytelling experiences in fiction today. J.C. Hutchins, author of the Seventh Son trilogy, calls the Failed Cities monologues gritty, imaginative, believable. T. Morris, author of Moravi, says the Failed Cities monologues creates a chilling tapestry of inner darkness that finds its outside voice. It's not a matter of wanting to listen. You have to. Visit PodioBooks.com to hear the series that's redefining the rules of podcast fiction. Variant Frequencies presents The Failed Cities Monologues by Matt Wallace. 8 lives, 2 cities, 1 story.